Arm's Length Reporting for investors who want the whole story. This is the Corlin Economics Report.
Welcome in, time for KER Politics. Big news about Kyle Rittenhouse. Jimmy?
So the jury acquitted Kyle Rittenhouse on all charges. It appears that the evidence and our legal system held true to the fact that this was self-defense. The unfortunate reality is the media, the left-wing progressive media, is still attacking this as a somehow protecting white supremacy in our nation, which is terrible. It's creating division and undermining faith in our justice system.
Yeah, it is a real shame, Jimmy. The fact that what actually started this trial, if there was no violence, I want to say, in Kenosha prior to when Kyle Rittenhouse arrived on the scene, this whole thing wouldn't have even occurred. That's what I have a major problem with. Jimmy, you want to get some comments on that?
Yes. The mainstream media, corporate media, MSNBC, NBC, CNN, a lot of the networks, New York Times, Washington Post, all painted a picture that Jacob Blake was some sort of innocent guy that was shot by police because he was black. That created the violence, and it was an absolute lie. In spite of them having documented evidence with video camera evidence at the time, they created the situation which created the violence that was used by political operatives in order to undermine stability in Kenosha to continue the violence that had been started with the George Floyd riots that were happening all around this nation. And it's absolutely despicable that those same stations are continuing to fabricate, if not out and out lie, to change the dynamic that would put this poor young man in prison for defending himself and his community where his father lived.
And I think that the one thing that isn't perhaps really brought out is the fact that this really is, in a very real sense, Mr. Rittenhouse Jr.'s community. There's no question about that. People are just saying he came from out of town because he wanted to go hunting. That's absolutely ridiculous. Clarify that, will you, Jimmy?
Yeah, absolutely. He came there there was burning and looting all around the nation at the time in multiple events and places. He came there to protect. He was bold. He did something as a 17-year-old that most adults and law enforcement was not doing. He was standing up to protect individual property, and he was trying to stop violence. He also came to help clean up and just protect the community that he had a relationship with. His father lived there. So there's no question about it that he's been painted as some white supremacist coming to kill black people, when in fact the only people shot were white people, two of which had weapons. And the prosecution has tried to hide the fact that all three of the people shot by Kyle Rittenhouse, as they attacked him, all three of them had extensive criminal records, were violent offenders, had done numerous things. In fact, one of them was a child rapist and been convicted and spent time in prison. The other one was a domestic abuser. One of them had just gotten out of the mental hospital. These were very, very dangerous circumstances for everyone. And the fact is, the state was not protecting people. Law enforcement was unable to cope with the violence. And that violence was exacerbated by officials in the city of Kenosha, legal officials as well as political officials, that were allowing this violence to continue for political agendas. And they risked the people. They risked everyone. And Kyle Rittenhouse was just someone that stood up to try to stop the violence.
You know, Jimmy, the one comment that I would make about this is that, you know, when you look at the rioting that's going on around the country, it's absolutely despicable. And I think that more citizens really have to get into this thing and do what they can to stop this rioting, because that's the only way that the communities where the rioting is taking place, that's the only way that they're going to really stand up and get their law enforcement officials involved. I have to say, if you look at what happened in Seattle with the CHOP, very definitely there were no citizens, for lack of better terms, in Seattle who had the posture, who had the very definitive stance that Kyle Rittenhouse took, for example. I think the people in every city where this violence is going on need to have to stand up and be obviously against it. It didn't happen in Seattle, and consequently in Seattle, there were also people killed, and the police chief of Seattle resigned because she was actually prevented from doing her job because of the various regulations. And people may disagree with me. They may say, well, Al, you're promoting vigilante type action. No, I'm not. I'm promoting the type of action where these professional riders from all over the country, when they come in, they will know that the communities where the riding is taking place does offer serious local defense against riders. How do you think about that?
Well, I think that's an important point, and that's what this Kyle Rittenhouse, the entire thing is about. It's about whether or not you can defend your community and your property and your life on because of threats of violence from the mob. And what we see is, and the unfortunate reality, Kenosha, Minnesota, Seattle, places in Los Angeles, San Francisco, the local population has allowed these narratives to continue where all cops are bad, you know, ACAB, where defund the police. They've allowed it. So the population is at fault for allowing this to happen. And what that means is they're depending on law enforcement to come save them and protect them at the same time that they're undermining law enforcement's ability to do it. So yeah, in the end, people are going to have to stand up. That's why you're seeing massive gun purchases around America right now. Democrats who never thought they'd own a gun are doing it to defend themselves, because if they call 911, no one may show up. And the reason why is defunding the police because of this entire progressive agenda, because of prosecutors that will not prosecute crime, even petty crime, all over San Francisco, the thousands and thousands and thousands of car robberies, and you know, the people walking in and out of stores without being, you know, just grabbing clothes and anything they can and walking away and not being charged or not being prosecuted. This leads to pandemonium. It leads to chaos. It also undermines any faith in the country. It undermines faith in law enforcement, and it destroys our communities. And you know what? If people allow it in those cities, then they deserve what they get. They better stand up and stop, and put a stop to it, which some of them are beginning to. They're
some
starting
of them
to wake
beginning
up.
To Jimmy, but in Seattle, when you were going through your explanation right now, I was thinking about really what's happening with the prosecuting attorneys in Seattle and in Portland. Many instances of late, in the last year or so, since this rioting has been going on, they have simply not prosecuted any of the rioters. I interviewed a fellow in Seattle when the shop situation was getting really in its heyday. This guy had come up all the way actually from, if I'm not mistaken, from Stockton, California. He was in every sense of his description, he was somebody who was a professional rioter. And I have to say that professional rioters who come from out of town need to be outnumbered. They need to be outnumbered by the local people who are standing up and saying, this simply cannot continue anymore. The only way that that's going to happen is if we have more folks like Kyle Rittenhouse. It's a shame that he ended up shooting and killing two individuals, but the fact of the matter is, let's look at the background of those two individuals. What were they
doing
there in the first place?
And they attacked him.
And they attacked him, yeah. I mean, as the saying goes, people say Kyle Rittenhouse was just somebody who was unqualified to do what he did. What about the two people who came in, one being mentally ill and another being a hardened criminal? What about those two people? Ladies and gentlemen, stick around. We're going to be right back after a commercial break. We're going to talk a little bit in the next segment about the approval or lack thereof of our President Joe Biden. Stick around.
Yeah.
Your weekly fix on finance and investing. This is the Corlin Economics Report.
Okay, welcome back. Going to talk about the approval ratings of the current president of the United States. No opinion here, no editorializing. The fact of the matter is the opinion ratings of Joe Biden are incredibly low. On Thursday, for example, a poll came out. The majority of the respondents to that poll basically said that Biden was not fit mentally to be in charge of running this country. Jiminy, your comments.
It's not going to get better for Joe Biden. He is not going to get younger. He's not going to get smarter. And the organization around him right now is infighting over what direction they will take the country and who will be in charge. It's actually more important, I think, for the leadership inside this administration or this regime to who's going to run things. And there's a fight between Biden's team and Harris's team of the future. It is not going to get better. Joe Biden is not making decisions. People underneath him are providing him information. They are protecting him from the press. They are protecting him from questions and press conferences. They are keeping him from other foreign leaders. They are keeping him from answering questions because most of the time when he answers them, he makes pretty significant blunders. And that just is not going to get better. And some of the problems that we're facing in America right now are absolutely like very serious and devastating potential problems with national security, with the border, with the economic situation. So I fear that his numbers are going to get worse and the infighting will get bigger because he's not in charge.
Well, he may not be in charge, but he is meeting with some of the world leaders. He has met with Vladimir Putin, and just very recently in a virtual meeting, he met with Xi Jinping of China. I'm not sure how successful that meeting was. I don't think anything was really significantly decided as a result of that. But he has been able to carry himself through meetings with Putin and Xi Jinping.
Well, and the Deng Xiaoping on the video conference, it turned out it turned out actually kind of I'm sorry, it's not Deng Xiaoping, it's Xi, Premier Xi, and it didn't turn out very well for them. Xi basically blew him off, and they were supposed to set potentially a summit meeting, but that fell through. So that was an embarrassment. And of course, Vladimir Putin has been publicly commenting on new American woke culture and negatively about the Biden administration and making some actually somewhat wise comments of the devastation that it's creating and its separation and divisions that it's creating, and not only in the United States, but also spreading to other places in the world. And there are a number of people, especially in Western Europe, that are quite angry and frustrated. Today, Joe Biden was supposed to have a meeting, actually a press conference with Justin Trudeau and Obrador, the president of Mexico. There was supposed to be a press conference. At the last minute, the White House canceled that press conference. So they're going to have the meeting, and there's going to be some specific talking points afterwards. But the interesting thing is Justin Trudeau, Premier of Canada, or the Prime Minister of Canada, he actually said he's going to do a press conference without Joe, even though they were supposed to do it together. So they are definitely protecting and hiding him. And certainly we saw at the G20 summit, as well as the meeting afterwards, that he's being pushed aside by world leaders and he's not being respected. And obviously because of decisions like what happened in Afghanistan, the pullout that left NATO members hanging, the fact that he still have Americans stuck in Afghanistan right now after promising to get them all out, and as well as, you know, border issues, economic issues that are actually driving the global economy into mass inflation. And that's, those problems are not going away. And he is not setting policy that will help them. And he's not making decisions that are going to support them. It's all about the image. And I think that's a huge mistake that they will not face. This administration, the advisors, will not face the reality of what they're going through right now, what America is going through.
You know, the only comment I can make about this very, very unfortunate situation with President Biden is the fact that eventually they're going to have to come out and they're going to have to say, Joe Biden is going to be stepping down from office, and this is why. What a terrible, terrible black mark in history for this man. You know, He's been a politician for 50 years, right? He's never really accomplished very much other than being a middle-of-the-road politician. But why didn't he see this coming? Why would he know that he wasn't going to go down in history as being particularly worthwhile as a president? It makes no sense to me, Jim.
Well, I think it has very little to do with Joe Biden other than his ego. He was running for president. He'd been, fourth time, I believe. And he actually kind of lucked into it because the other opponents in the Democratic ticket were so far away from the mainstream. I mean, Elizabeth Warren, Bernie Sanders, those key players left him to be the only one that appeared to be in the middle ground because he's an old school Democrat. So what happened was he wins South Carolina because of a very large black vote. The Democratic Party says, okay, we've got to put this guy through because he's the guy that looks like the institutional Democrat and he's going to make everybody be nice and he's going to take away bad tweets and he's going to stabilize the country. And that was the argument that they made, that the Democratic Party made. But what we find is that those same progressive ideologies and these same very aggressive policies and principles of the advisors that had been pushed in the Democratic Party to the far left are making the decisions and giving a direction. So Joe Biden has turned out to be nothing that he said he was going to be, which is why his poll numbers are dropping down. People thought he was going to be stable. They thought that he was going to be a good influence, that he was going to bring back confidence in America, that he'd be able to manage COVID, that he'd be able, and he promised to manage the border, he promised to manage the economy and stop the divisiveness. But what has happened is it's actually exacerbated every one of those issues, made them worse. And as much as they try to spin it, they can't hide it because even the average American is paying, 50% more for gas and 30% more for food at the grocery store. They're still seeing the massive problems at the border. They're looking at us globally and saying, what are we doing? How could we have lost 20 years of trillions of dollars and all that equipment to the Taliban in Afghanistan? People are, you can't hide that. As much as they try to spin it, they cannot hide that. Oh, and by the way, the COVID policies are continuing to fail. We are still in lockdown. We are still doing things that aren't based on science, but are based on politics. And I'd love to, I think we ought to talk about some of those issues in the next two segments too.
Well, there's no question about that. I just want to read a headline here because we're a minute away from the top of the hour news break. The headline that I'm looking at is, quote, "Majority see Biden as not capable of leading the country, that he is mentally unfit." This comes from Eric Schneider at MRC, so it's not just coming from some guy off in the blue who's got a problem with Joe Biden. Obviously, he does, but an awful lot of people do have a problem with this, with this guy, and I'm really sorry about that. I understand he's a fairly decent human being, but he sure has made a mistake stepping into the role of total incompetence as a president. Stick around, you guys. We're going to be right back.
To find out more about today's guests, visit us on the web at www.kereport.com. You're listening to the Corlin Economics Report. We'll be back in a moment. Providing unique reporting on markets and companies since 1990. This is the Corlin Economics Report.
Okay, done with the top of the hour news. You know, I don't know about you guys out there and gals, but I got to tell you, it's very, very important for me to emphasize one thing, and that is I listen to the news almost every single night, and I find it to be very, very depressing. I wish we could put a different spin on it so it wasn't quite nearly as depressing as it comes across as being. I think that's impossible to do at this point in time, though, because I think our country is on the way down. I'd like you guys to think about that, and I'd like you to think about what you personally can do to change it and make it more positive. Jim and I are going to talk about that a little bit in the next segment. Having said that, let's look at the economic situation in the United States right now. I wonder if you all realize just how despicable the supply chain is in this country. You know, I go into drugstores, my local drugstore, for example, and I have, in my local drugstore, I would say that approximately 60% of the shelves are now absolutely empty, and that's sad to me. Many of the products that are on the shelves also are clearly older products, so that's bad. The next thing that's really bad that is even worse than that is this inflation that we're going through right now, and the dog is angry about that too. But what I have to say is that the level of prices among groceries, which are up about 30%, automobiles are up way, way too much. I went out and bought some clothing a couple days ago. I found the inflation there to also be very high. And the inflation is ridiculous in terms of real estate. It has put most housing out of the reach of affordability of most people. I think we're in trouble, very serious trouble economically. Jimmy, what do you think?
Yeah, and the Biden solution is to print more money. It is inflation's rising, and so let's print more money. This is absolutely devastating, potentially, for small businesses and for families that live on the margins. You know, there are a lot of people out there that live paycheck to paycheck. Usually they're young, they've got a couple of kids, and when all of a sudden your paycheck doesn't get you to work or doesn't get you to pay childcare and you can't buy food because of the gas prices, food prices, and just the overall costs. And of course, the problems you're talking about with supply chain, which is average things are going up, that's going to hurt a big percentage of the population. The elitists, the rich, the powerful people in D.C. that this doesn't affect too much, you're actually seeing them make comments like, oh, don't worry about it. Americans can afford it. Well, you know what? A whole bunch of them can't.
No.
And I think the policies right now that they're pushing with these increased, unbelievable budget principles and targets for infrastructure deals where they're going to just print more money and put us deeper into debt is going to create even deeper, very problematic situation in the next months, if not years.
Well, for what it's worth, the official numbers right now are on consumer indebtedness are incredibly high. Records are being broken. I wonder how much of that has to do with the huge mortgages that have to go hand in hand with the pricing increases that have occurred recently. Today, $1 million for a house is absolutely something to sneeze at. Not for Big Al, but I think it is. It's getting to be that way more and more for a larger and larger percent of the population. Having said that, something needs to be done. The main problem right now, easy to say something needs to be done, but the main problem right now is the money printing, for lack of better terms, and it's quite frankly the only way that the United States can stay. I don't want to use the word solvent, because the United States is really not, in my opinion, completely solvent, but it's the only way that the United States can continue to have the facade of being solvent, for lack of better terms. And to me, that's very, very sad. I became aware of this in the late 1990s, and it's even more obvious today, and it's gotten to the point where the U.S. economically, I can very, very, I believe, accurately predict is going to fall on its face. Jimmy?
Yeah, you've got people like Jen Psaki, the White House spokesperson, saying things like, well, you know, Americans can afford this, or makes comments that, yeah, we, you know, saved a lot of money during COVID and now they're spending it. Well, that debt that you're talking about is increasing very, very rapidly because of all these costs. And that's going to make it very difficult for them to survive if we have a bit of, you know, a blip in the market issues, you know, not just the stock market, but overall our ability to give materials and supplies. We've moved to this whole idea of just-in-time logistics. And just-in-time logistics means let's don't warehouse things. Let's just get the supply chain being organized and managed so quickly because we're going to move things all efficiently. Well, that works great when there's no problems. When you throw a problem in it, it affects the entire network all the way down. So you don't get things produced. You don't get raw materials. Then that impacts the supplies of those end products and then the shipping problem. And when you have a policy driven by this administration, which is going to force people that don't want vaccines to be mandated. And thankfully, that's, you know, we've had a little bit of a reprieve in that from the Fifth Circuit Court. But that's forcing potentially up to 37% of the truck drivers in America out of work, or to say they're not going to do it. You have federal employees, you have numerous employees in the airline industry that are saying, hey, wait a second, this is really causing problems in every aspect of our economy, and it's unnecessary. It's not needed. So you're setting policy that actually disturbs and undermines the economy. You're printing more money, you're spending more money, when, and then actually saying that we're going to buy our way out of it, that by, that we'll raise enough taxes from the spending to get it out, to get out of it. It doesn't, the logic is gone. There's no real, you know, this is complete dishonesty, and there's no economist that believes most of this crap. And the ones that do are doing it purely and on political basis, or to move towards a socialist controlled system. And that's what's really unfortunate right now. That's what we're seeing.
Jimmy, it is unfortunate. I want to bring up one thing. We've got about officially 2 minutes left here in this segment, but I think that one point that needs to be brought up, because it's critical, and that is, as Jen said, well, people saved a lot of money and now they're spending it. That's really a false statement. And the reason I say that is because savings is based on assets. Okay, and when assets grow, or when they're inflated as real estate prices are inflated, it's easy to say that, well, Mr. and Mrs. Smith's net worth just went up theoretically in a very large amount because their house today is worth, let's take an extreme number, is worth $1.1 million versus 500,000 when our measurement of their net worth started, and they put down $600,000 as being the gain and the hard gain meaning they can lay their hands on that money anytime they want to. And if that were the case, then it would be very accurate to say people have saved more money and now they're simply spending it. But that $600,000 gain that I just used in the example of the home for is that's a great gain as long as there's somebody around to pay the $600,000 increase in the price. Today that's happening, but sooner rather than later, that's going to be a very, very false indicator, because people are simply not going to be able to afford to pay those types of increases. And since they won't be afford to pay them, because lending, real estate lending, is going to get back to more realistic levels. When that comes, then all of a sudden the increase in the savings rate that Jen Psaki is talking about is going to simply not be there. And that's when the piper is going to have to be paid. And that's when the world is going to realize that the United States really is an emperor who is not wearing any clothes. Stick around, you guys. Going to be right back. Okay, here to wrap up KER Politics. You know, we're going to take this final segment here. Jimmy and I are going to talk about many issues. We're going to mention many issues that we think everybody has to be aware of. Let's start out with the CDC, Jim. You and I did an editorial on that last Thursday.
Yeah, so what has happened is there's a lawsuit being filed against the mandates in New York. The lawyer for this lawsuit and his firm requested from the Centers for Disease Control any information in a FOIA request, in a Freedom of Information Act request, on natural immunity. And in that request, the CDC came back and said they have no documentation on it. What that means is that they either are hiding it and lying, or they're not doing any research on natural immunity to the COVID virus. And with them updating their statistics just recently, they went 5 months without updating them. They'd expected about 5 months ago, they expected about 100 million Americans had had COVID already. They updated their statistics this few weeks after this FOIA request to say that it looks like somewhere around 145 million, and this is a generalization, but 145 million have had COVID. And they had no information on natural immunity and no record of anybody getting the disease twice after having natural immunity. They provided no data. So they're either lying or there's no data. If there's no data on that, and because there is no one that has COVID after getting the virus, then that means a big portion of the population is immune at this point, has built up immune responses to it, completely separate from the Pfizer vaccine.
Right.
That's one issue. That's really, really significant statement. Another is Dr. Fauci admitting that hospitalizations for fully vaccinated people are way up and deaths are way up. And this is an acknowledgement that the vaccines are not working as advertised. That's something that everyone should be worried about.
No question whatsoever about that one, Jim. You know, one thing I want to say is that I want to stress a couple of things that we talked about, one of them in the last segment. Economically, take a really, really close look. A lot of people, for example, Robert Kiyosaki, who's quite an interesting man from an economics knowledgeability standpoint, is saying the United States, in his opinion, is headed for the biggest crash that it's ever seen. I think that's very true. Be very, very cognizant of what's going on economically, because you want to be able to get out before it's too late, for lack of better terms. The other thing I wanted to say, and then we're going to wrap this thing up a little quick, not a little quicker, but then we are going to go into full wrap-up mode, and that is, I made a comment in the first segment about people and communities need to stand tall, for lack of better terms, and need the out-of-town rioters to realize that they are not welcome in their communities. And I want to say, do that effectively, do that responsibly. Don't necessarily try to be dramatic. Do it effectively and responsibly. Jimmy, your turn.
And I absolutely think that the way you do that is not through violence, and it's not
right.
You obviously, everyone has the right to protect themselves from violence.
Sure.
And these people that are threatening to burn and destroying, there's nothing good about that. You have to stand up to that. But the way you stand up to it over a long period of time is you vote out the people that would take away those individual rights that won't protect you. And that's what we're seeing right now in many of these small elections from this last November cycle, local elections, where a lot of, more conservative, more people concerned about public safety. And that's the direct ramification. You know, who the heck came up with the idea that defund the police was a smart idea from the political side? It's incompetent, unless there are sophisticated efforts to undermine the complete stability of the United States. And I think there are some people that are orchestrating issues like that. And that's what people have to be aware of. The way you solve it, the way you get involved in your community, is to stand up, make statements, vote out the people, and put pressure on your local elected officials to do the right thing to protect everyone.
Well, that so far, I have to say, happily is happening in Seattle. The city council didn't totally change as a result of the recent elections, but it did begin to change. People in Seattle began to become very aware that the socialist, violent type city council members were no longer winning elections. Sarah Mitchell won, for example, and she was not in that category. And the new mayor of Seattle is a very, very conservative individual. I'm looking for great things to happen in Seattle. And I believe, with the people who I speak with who are down there, that I talk with every time I go down, I believe that that's the kind of change that people really want. They want to feel safe, and they want to feel, even more importantly than that, Jim, they really want to feel like their actions are responsible. And not prosecuting criminals, not prosecuting people because they're afraid of the repercussions of prosecuting that particular dynamic, that particular group. is really, really wrong, in my opinion. All you're doing is demolishing a person's sense of self-worth if you let them do whatever they want to do, because they know what's wrong and they have to be stopped.
You know, Al, the big issue that is really problematic for Seattle and everywhere else in the state of Washington and California and Oregon is the legislative actions that have actually stripped law enforcement of the ability to defend and protect people. Those are the things that have to be changed. And, you know, one little November election here is not changing Seattle. Everybody on that ticket was still, you know, kind of a semi-progressive. They just, you know, there were, except for the attorney, the city attorney, which I think Ann Davidson won, and she was a conservative. Jenny Durkin hasn't come up yet for election, so she's still...
But she has announced she's not going to run.
Correct, yes. And so we'll see what happens with that. It's a positive move that people were coming back to their senses, but there's still a lot of people out there that are manipulated by the media that have created these conditions that, you know, there's white supremacy everywhere. In a state that really has no problems with things like that, it's pretty disturbing actually to watch. And to watch this administration submit, the Biden regime actually submit nominees that perpetuate these same views and these socialist ideological views is pretty disturbing. When you see someone like Saleh Omarova, the comptroller of the nomination for the comptroller of the currency, which would federally regulate all our banks, being nominated, and she actually was a Soviet from Kazakhstan that went to Moscow State University that did her thesis on Marx and has publicly stated recently that she would like to destroy the oil and gas industry in the U.S., that it should go bankrupt, and that she wants state nationalized control of currency. Of all our local and community banks. That's incredible. That whole system of socialist control of federally centralized management for economies has been proven over and over again to fail. And the problem is we have people that buy into that ideology that are being used locally to undermine stability in these local elections and the local law enforcement. And it's all part, really, of a very dangerous precedent that America has been put through recently.
It's an incredibly dangerous thing that we're being put through right now. We're not being put through it. We're actually almost acquiescing to it. We're not doing anything to bring out our views other than what you and I do, and many of the other podcasters and radio folks like us do. It's very important. We need to show that we are not happy with the way things are going, but we don't need to pack guns to do that. It's very, very, I think it's... Go ahead, Jim.
You got to stop people like Merrick Garland who use the counterterrorism vision of the FBI to go after parents at school board meetings.
Oh.
And that letter was just leaked after he testified for Congress that, in fact, the day before the FBI had used a tracking mechanism to track parents. Right. This is very disturbing abuse of power. In America, we cannot allow that to continue.
Numerous disturbing things are going on right now in our country, Jim. People need to listen to our opinions. If they agree, they need to put them perhaps into action. They need to listen to what we're saying because it really makes common sense. Let's keep America great, seriously.
The Corlin Economics Report is produced for A.B. Corlin and Associates. Opinions expressed on this program are intended solely for the entertainment of our listeners, do not constitute investment advice, and are not necessarily those of this network, radio station, or our sponsors. Find out more about this program and today's guests by visiting www.kereport.com. For Al Corlin, this is Colleen Robbins. Join us again next week for the Corlin Economics Report.